to the show on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, the voice of soccer on TSN television. We say hello and good morning to Luke Weilman. How are you doing this morning, Luke?
I'm great. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. And listen, no days off, but I'm sure a guy in your position who loves the game, the beautiful game, would like nothing better than to have wall-to-wall soccer here for, what, I guess the next 2.5 weeks, game every day?
Yeah, 2.5 weeks, a game every day during the group stage, and then it all wraps up a month from now, a month on Sunday for the final in London at Wembley. And yeah, just absolutely thrilled to be able to have this tournament after what's gone off over the last 18 months in the world. I think the fact it's been delayed for a year, and we've seen what life would be like without sports, without major events, without fans in the stands at these places, it's going to make it even more special. Today in Stadio Olimpico in Rome, which is the venue where Italy won the tournament back in 1968, they will have 15,000 in there. And it's, yes, not going to be full and nowhere near the atmosphere that it would be. But that's the first time since the start of this pandemic that there will be a crowd for a football soccer event in Italy. So pretty special moments going to be happening across Europe. And as the tournament goes on, especially in England, more fans are going to be allowed in as the play continues. So by the end of this tournament, as long as everything goes well in terms of COVID cases and that sort of thing, we could be looking at a pretty special moment in Wembley with at least a half full, if not near full stadium. And a year ago, everybody would certainly have taken that.
Hard question for a soccer commentator to answer, but I'll put it to you anyway. I'll give you a choice of either you can only attend and or watch or commentate on the World Cup or Euro. What do you choose?
The World Cup. The Euro is actually probably a better tournament than the World Cup in terms of the standard, because you have these top countries. You're missing, obviously, the likes of an Argentina or a Brazil, but often we get to the latter stages of the World Cups, and they are European teams that are involved. We saw that in the semifinals and the final last time in Russia in the World Cup in 2018. They've expanded the Euros over the last couple of events. This is the second time there are 24 teams, which gives us the opportunity to see some teams there for the first time. Iceland was the darling of everybody last time around. This time, Finland, North Macedonia coming into the tournament for the first time. But the level of play is very, very high indeed. And you look at the best players on the planet, a lot of them, the majority of them are going to be there. The two that are missing, obviously, not being from Europe, are Lionel Messi and Neymar. But having said all that about the quality of the Euros, the World Cup is where it is at for a football fan. If you could win the Euros or the World Cup, you want to win the World Cup. If you want to reach the pinnacle, you want to commentate on a World Cup game. And I've been very fortunate, not on the men's side, but on the women's side, to commentate on the 2015 World Cup final in Vancouver at BC Place when the U.S. played Japan, and to be with Canada in France for the last World Cup in 2019. And those are just really special events. So, yeah, for me, not a difficult decision. I'd love to do either, but if it was Euro or World Cup and you could do one, definitely the World Cup.
Luke, to that, it's country to country. What are the actual crowds going to look like? And without having, you know, full venues, is it going to take away a little bit? Or you think people are just so pumped to see some world-class soccer?
Yeah, I don't think it will take away. We saw in some games towards the end of the season in England that fans were back in the stadiums in small numbers, and 10,000 in a 40,000 stadium was sounding like 80,000 with the way that the fans had so much fervor about them and the ability to get back into the stadium. I think everyone has been reinvigorated with all this, what's gone off, and that just it is going to depend venue to venue how many fans can be in the stadium, but we're looking at that 15,000, as I said today. There are some other venues where you've got to get up to 40,000 people in the stadium as well. And I just think that it doesn't matter how many fans are there. It's the fact that they are back. It would have been a completely different tournament if there had been no one in the stands. It just takes away from the event, the occasion, the atmosphere of the stadium. We're going to see the Copa America played at exactly the same time in Brazil, which is the Southern American equivalent of the Euros, and there won't be any fans in the stands for that, and I think the contrast will be quite stark. This tournament's being played across 11 venues in Europe, which is completely different to the past, where the most they've had is two different countries, but it's 11 different countries hosting this tournament. So it is going to be spread out across the continent, but I think whether you've got the fans or not, the advantage of being at home, for England, for example, they can play, if they get to the final, every one of their games apart from one, when they'd maybe have to travel to Rome, could be at Wembley. The advantage right now is about the COVID situation and not having to travel and not getting on the planes and not being in different countries throughout the tournament. And that, I think, is more where the home advantage comes rather than how many fans can be in the stadium.
Talking to Luke Wylman, the voice of soccer on TSN. So let's start with the team that probably has the biggest rooting interest in Canada, and that is England. And a lot of people, Luke, are very excited about this year's side, thinking they have a chance to win the championship. But with that comes the pressure and also the history of a team that's been more than 50 years since they've won a major championship. So how do you think they're going to deal with that, and how do you think they're going to do?
Well, I'm based in Toronto, so to give you the hockey equivalent, you know, 1966 was the World Cup. That's the last time England won anything. So it's like people thinking the Leafs have got a really good team and a great chance to win. And yet they still haven't since the 60s. So it's happened before. The big question for me this time is how brave England will be with Gareth Southgate's team selection. There is no doubt they have a more talented squad than they have had in a long time. Players like Phil Foden, who has won the Premier League with Manchester City this year. Players like Jack Grealish, who has been brilliant with Aston Villa and is one of those players who can make anything happen, a magician on the pitch. But they've not been in a major tournament like this before. They're still in their early 20s. Does Gareth Southgate, at home, in front of the nation at Wembley on Sunday, go with these young players who are almost carefree, but without the major tournament experience, but with the ability to turn games and create some magic? Or does he go safe and go with the tried and tested players who've been there before, got to the semi-final at the World Cup a couple of years ago? And I think that is going to set the tone for how this tournament moves forward. The England fans are clamoring for these young players to be in, Foden and Grealish and Mount, Rice and Phillips. The only negative could be with Harry Maguire injured, the Manchester United defender. Will they be good enough defensively? How quickly can he get back? Will it be game two or three, or will it be the knockout rounds? And then the other thing is they're on collision course with whoever finishes second in the group of death, which is Group F, which includes France, Portugal and Germany. And the winner of England's group will play the second place from that group in the next round. So immediately, as soon as they get to the round of 16, the draw has not been kind. If they win their group, they're going to have a huge game against another team that expects to go far in this tournament, either France, Germany, or Portugal. So after that, we'll know if this England team's for real or not.
Luke, in regards to the pressure, would it not be easier to go with the younger group? And kind of big picture, if you took a step back, isn't this exactly what you'd want to prepare them for the World Cup the following year?
Yeah, and these are players that have done it at the highest level. I mean, Phil Foden from Man City has won a U17 World Cup. Not that you can compare between youth and senior tournaments, but he's won the Premier League three times at the age of 21. He was in the Champions League final a couple of weeks ago. The big question is with England and the pressure that is on their shoulders, how they deal with that. I think these younger players have shown that they can. And if it was me, I would throw them in. You want your best 11 out there. I think it's not at this moment about experience and who's played in tournaments before. It's about right now, what's the best 11 that can win you this game. And Gareth Southgate will have loyalty to players that got them to the semi-final of the World Cup a few years ago. And it is going to be a very young squad, a squad that really has a massive amount of players coming into this experience for the first time. But Southgate, I think, is a wonderful coach for this moment. He's a coach who has been through this before as a player, experienced the disappointment of missing a penalty in the Euro 96 tournament in the shootout against Germany when England were playing at Wembley on home soil in front of the country. He's experienced the disappointment, the setbacks that come in international play, and I think he's a manager that the young players relate to. So there's a lot of reason to be positive for England, but as I started by saying, whenever England have had positivity around them in the past, they found a way to let everybody down. So not getting the hopes up yet, but we'll see. There's a lot of very good teams in this tournament, but just for England, they are in the conversation. They're second favorites with the bookies. They're one of the top four or five teams, and if you're in that bracket, you've got a chance.
Luke Wylman, the voice of soccer on TSN, is our guest. The betting favorite is France, the defending World Cup champions. They're returning 9 of their 11 starters. Luke, they're adding Karim Benzema back to the team. In your eyes, should they be the favorite? And what would be maybe the only reason that France wouldn't get through deep into this tournament?
I'm not sure of a reason why they wouldn't get. They absolutely should be all the way to the final. They're my favorite to win it. When you look at the way that they played to win the World Cup, the fact that they can continue to get better throughout the tournament. We've talked about young players. Kylian Mbappe was the second teenager to score in a World Cup final. He's already scored more Champions League goals than any other player in history before his 23rd birthday, and he's leading the line. And then they bring back Karim Benzema, who's been out for 6 years after legal complications and fallouts with the team, that sort of thing. And he's back alongside Mbappe and Griezmann up top. They have an attack better than anybody else in the tournament, if they're all fit, and there was an injury concern about Griezmann yesterday in training. Then they have someone like N'Golo Kanté in the midfield, who was magnificent this season in the Premier League and the Champions League. You know, they're strong defensively as well. They haven't got Matuidi, who was a key part of their team in 2018, and he's not made it in, having made the move to Major League Soccer to play for Inter Miami. But I just can't see, you know, really... For me, if they don't win the tournament, it will be an upset. If they get to the final, some strange things can happen. You never know if they're a runner-up in this tournament. You know, but I just can't see anyone beating them before the final. Having said that, you never know what the dynamic is like in locker rooms. So there was a lot of talk about what Benzema's reintroduction to the locker room would be like. There's been some complaints over the past couple of days. Olivier Giroud, after the last friendly, seemed to be indicating that he was upset because Kylian Mbappe wasn't passing to him enough, and that upset Kylian Mbappe. So when you've cut all these players together for a month in a small, confined space, you never quite know what happens. Plus, throw in the COVID situation. Spain already had to play their whole under-21 team for their final warm-up game because of isolation and COVID cases in their ranks. They're hoping to have everyone back for the first game. But you just never know right now if all of a sudden we get to a game and there's a COVID case and people having to isolate. It could throw everything off.
For years, I followed the Belgium program under Roberto Martinez, and I look at that group and go through the roster. Certainly a lot of star power in a very favorable group. Thoughts on them in the tournament?
Yeah, I think Belgium are a team that you would expect to go far. They're a team that in the past has had these great players but haven't quite made it over the line. You know, they're the top ranked side in the world by FIFA. They have been for 3 years. They've been pretty consistent under Roberto Martinez. A lot of people are saying this is their best chance to win a major trophy. They just fell short and ended up in the semifinals in the World Cup when people were saying a similar thing, that they were primed to win it in Russia back in 2018. Lots of weapons that can hurt any side. Will Kevin De Bruyne be fit to go after that injury in the Champions League final? He's a big player for them, obviously. Will we get the Eden Hazard that has been brilliant for Belgium and brilliant in the past, who can make things change on the pitch and make situations appear that not many other players can? Or will we get the Eden Hazard that has disappointed and been injured most of the season at Real Madrid? Lukaku's had a wonderful season for Inter Milan, winning Serie A. So they've got an absolute abundance of quality, world-class performers down the spine. If you look at even back in goal with Thibaut Courtois, then De Bruyne, Lukaku as well. The experience of a group that a lot of them were there in the World Cup in 2018 as well. So this is one of those moments where I wouldn't say now or never, because you're looking ahead. The next World Cup with this delay is only just over 18 months or so away in December of next year, because it got pushed back in Qatar. They'll still have most of this group together. But this next couple of years is huge for this Belgium team. Are they going to continue to be the pretenders, the great, hope, or are they going to be able to lift a trophy?
We got lots of Italian fans and lots of Italian fans who are listeners. Forza Azzurri, what do you think of their chances in the tournament?
Yeah, when you talked about England probably being the biggest followed team in the country, Italy's not far behind them, if they are at all. And with my messages that I get, most of the Italian fans are in pretty good mood heading into this tournament. If their squad announcement is anything to go by, then they are going to take this tournament by storm. Because while other countries were putting out things on social media or videos they'd filmed or even just press releases to announce who would be their 26 players in this tournament, Italy had a three-hour primetime TV show that included players all suited and booted, dancing, singing, the coaches playing tennis with frying pans and tennis balls, all sorts of different stuff going on. They won the squad announcement, absolutely for sure. They might also win on the pitch. This is a team that was in absolute disarray in 2018. They missed the World Cup. It was an embarrassment. They've retooled. They've got Roberto Mancini in, a coach who has really galvanized this group. And it's no longer the old Italian way. They're playing with a little bit more freedom. They're playing with a little bit more of an attacking flair to them. And they're in amazing form coming into this tournament. They won all 10 games in the qualifying for the tournament. They're unbeaten in 27. You've got to go back to September of 2018 for the last time Italy won. So the hopes are high, and there's a big reason for them to be high. A lot of players as well. You look back to 2006 when they won the World Cup. This is the first major tournament they've had when they haven't got one of that class of 2006. So this is a chance for some new players like Donnarumma, the 22-year-old goalkeeper, who's been brilliant for AC Milan and is set to move for a lot of money to PSG, replacing the incredible career that Buffon had. And he was always there at these major tournaments for Italy. So you have some newer faces around. You still have the likes of Chiellini and Bonucci, a central defensive pairing that adds up to something like the age of 70. But when you look at what they are, where they've come from over the last couple of years, I think the Italian fans have got every reason to be excited about this.
Luke, sorry, the reigning champion ends up being Portugal, and I go back to that final game. It's always about Ronaldo. He ends up subbing out in injury, and you go into a tournament like this. I guess thoughts on them, and I'm only saying from what I'm reading, they think this might be one of the strongest teams Portugal's ever put on the field.
Yeah, and there are lots of times when, in the past, we've talked about, can Cristiano Ronaldo lift Portugal to glory? He didn't have to in 2016 because he came off injured in the final, and they got the job done. It went to extra time. It was a few nervy moments and some iconic moments of Cristiano Ronaldo with his leg packed up with ice, running up and down the touchline, trying to almost conduct the orchestra from the technical area there on the sideline. But this is about much more than Cristiano Ronaldo now. They've got Rui Patricio, a great goalkeeper, Ruben Dias, who was the player of the year in England, one of the best defenders in the world right now, potentially the best defender in the world, Bruno Fernandes, who had a magnificent season with Manchester United, Bernardo Silva, of Manchester City as well. So, you know, João Felix, who's a really good young talent coming through, who's been compared to the likes of a Messi with the ability that he has and the chance of how good he could get. So this is an opportunity for Portugal to go deep again. Of course, the big question is, you know, how do they cope immediately in this tournament, in this group that they're in? You know, they're playing France, they're playing Germany, they're playing a Hungary team who is going to be playing some games on home soil as well. So while in most tournaments, if you've got that group, you'd give Hungary absolutely no chance, maybe this time around, with fans in the stadiums at home, you know, they might get that little extra lift as well to be able to make them more competitive. So Portugal will have to start well. In that group with France, Germany, Portugal, you know, any team that stumbles out of the gate, in the past, there's usually a time to be able to make that up and improve as the tournament goes on to reach the pinnacle and get to your best in the final. But with these three teams all in the same group, Portugal are going to have to hit the ground running.
All right, just a couple more for you. I'm a Dutchman. I love the young players that they've added, but the team appears to be out of form right now. What's the issue, and is there a way that they can rescue it for this tournament?
There is a way they can rescue it because they have that talent. They have a Wijnaldum. They have a Depay, players who have been great at club level, who can make a huge difference. I'm not sure they have the manager to be able to get the best out of this group of players. There's already a bit of a lot of pressure on Frank de Boer, who has come in, you know, wonderful player in his day and a wonderful career as the coach of Ajax, where he won a lot domestically in the Netherlands, but he hasn't had a lot of success since, and even got fired in Major League Soccer with Atlanta United last year. And now he's looking to galvanize this group and get them going. You know, people want Dutch teams to attack, to play that expressive way that has always been their trademark. I'm not sure that we'll see that from this group of players. If they can, you know, strike gold, if they can get everybody on the same page and have that month where they are just all absolutely 100% performing to the top of their ability, then they've got the talent there to make a difference in this tournament. They've got players, like I mentioned, who can make a huge difference in games. The loss of Virgil van Dijk, the Liverpool central defender, is huge, of course. He's injured. But yeah, if they can get Depay, who is their probably their biggest goal threat, to perform on the international stage at the very highest moment of the game. If they can get that sort of performance from De Jong, Wijnaldum, you know, they've got the players there, but can Frank de Boer be the man to pull that out of them? We'll have to wait and see.
Who wins the Golden Boot? Who's going to be the top scorer of the tournament?
Well, usually whoever goes furthest. So Kylian Mbappe, I don't think you can look far from him in terms of this tournament winning the Golden Boot. But the other one would be Harry Kane. If England are going to win, Harry Kane has to be good, and he will be the Golden Boot winner.
All right, good stuff. Kind of take us through how the television coverage beyond the games is going to work with you guys.
Yeah, well, on the air today at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. There's a lavish opening ceremony happening about 30 minutes after that, so we'll have all of that for you. And then as of tomorrow, we start with a week-long three games a day. So we're on at 8:30 in the morning through till 5:30 in the evening. It's going to be fantastic.
All right, wall to wall, all covered on TSN television. Of course, we'll have a lot of games here on TSN 1200 as well. Luke, lots of great insight there. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the tournament, and thanks for the time this morning.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, there's Luke Wildman joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the bigger, better pizza. Order online at GabrielPizza.com. Simmer. That Belgium question was all world, my friend.
Oh, man, yeah.